Hello, I'm Pastor Rod Holler of the Cape Baptist Church in Cape Coral, Florida. I hope this message will be a blessing to you. Thanks for listening.
Ecclesiastes. An unusual book compared to other books because it's written from a different perspective. It is a man looking for satisfaction in the world. A man that, in his quest, Solomon succeeded in his endeavors. So when he concludes, vanity of vanities, all is vanity, he's not saying that from a position of frustration because he didn't get it. Rather, he got it. In all of the things that he attempted to do, he truly concluded, I get it. And I'm still not happy. Ecclesiastes 1:2, vanity of vanities, saith the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. And then we have the conclusion of the book. Ecclesiastes 12:13, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. After he pours out his heart, fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God shall bring every work into judgment, every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil. If we truly take that last verse to heart, that's sobering. One day, everything will be made manifest, whether it be good or evil. Every secret thing, God is going to deal with it. That is liberating, and at the same time, it's condemning. Because we go, uh-oh. And at the same token, we don't have to worry about certain things because God's going to take care of it. These truths that Solomon is expounding on in this book are valid for us today as they were hundreds of years ago. He is looking for purpose and satisfaction. Our last study was meaning and satisfaction in life is not found in knowledge. Now we're going to consider his experience as he sought for satisfaction in, if you will, accomplishments. A variety of accomplishments to find satisfaction and purpose and meaning. Mostly in the arena of earthly pleasures. You remember our big outline of this story in this book. Ecclesiastes chapter 1 verses 1 through 11 is life without God is meaningless. Then Ecclesiastes 1:12 through 6:12 through the whole chapter of 6. The efforts and thoughts to find meaning and purpose. And then in 7 to the end of the book, his conclusions. Well, let us consider our text for tonight, Ecclesiastes 2, starting at verse 1. I said in mine heart, go to now, I will prove thee with mirth, therefore enjoy pleasure. And behold, this also is vanity. I said of laughter, it is mad, and of mirth, what doeth it? I sought in mine heart to give myself unto wine, yet acquainting mine heart with wisdom, and to lay hold on folly, till I might see what was that good for the sons of men, which they should do under the heaven all the days of their life. I made me great works. I builded me houses. I planted me vineyards. I made me gardens and orchards, and I planted trees in them of all kind of fruits. I made me pools of water, to water therewith the wood that bringeth forth trees. I got me servants and maidens, and had servants born in my house. Also I had great possessions of great and small cattle, above all that were in Jerusalem before me. I gathered me also silver and gold, and the peculiar treasure of kings and of the provinces. I gat me men singers and women singers, and the delights of the sons of men, as musical instruments, and that of all sorts. So I was great, and increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me. And whatsoever mine eyes desired, I kept not from them. I beheld not mine heart from any joy, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor. And this was my portion of all my labor. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought, and on the labor that I had labored to do, and behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit. And there was no profit under the sun. You know, in a way, that almost needs no commentary. It is so straightforward. I did this. I did this. I did this. And remember, he succeeded. And I did this. And at the end of it all was vanity and vexation of spirit, and there was no profit under the sun. This world is fleeting. Do we not look back as we go through the years and think of things that were so precious to us as kids and has no interest to us today? The classic, if I could go back, would we do things differently, right? If that's assuming we could take the brain that we have now. No, don't do that. And how many days did we waste? Well, in chapter 2, verses 1 through 8, Solomon shares his endeavors for satisfaction with various accomplishments. Laughter, wine, building projects with landscaping, servants, livestock, wealth, music. And he concluded, once again, it's all vanity. It's all meaningless. Do you have things in your life you look back? I put so much into it. That doesn't mean anything. Remember, this world is not going to remember any of us. It really isn't. Only what is done for Christ will last. Quote, he, the author Solomon, now resolves to abandon the studious efforts for their quiet. He will substitute the excitement of feverish pleasure. But this tremendous action from the joys of the philosopher to coarser animal pleasure is not easy. He had to goad his mind before it was ready for this new and low direction. He has to say to his heart, go to now, and I will prove thee with mirth. What a fall is here. From the contemplation of high themes of truth, the works of God and man, to mere sensual pleasure? But the experiment is brief, it would be, for a man of wisdom could not be long in discovering the utter worthlessness of sensual gratification. Sharp and swift comes the conclusion, I said of laughter, it's mad, and of mirth, what doeth it? It has sometimes been the question of thoughtful people, how the wise man could bring himself to try this second experiment. The effort to find happiness in the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eye. This is usually thought to be the delight of fools. But that a man who could say he had seen the works that are done under the sun, whose philosophy had ranged over new things until they were seemed to be old things recurrent. Who could truly say that he had gotten more wisdom than all that had been before him in Jerusalem? For such a one to fly from philosophy to pleasure, from meditation to mirth, is accounted phenomenally strange. But it's not. Across just such extremes does the restless spirit fly that has not yet learned that happiness is not the creature of circumstance, but the outgrow of the life, and how it magnifies this inner character of happiness to reflect that even wisdom, pursued for its own sake, may be seen to be so hollow that the soul will fly to the farthest distance from it, inferring that even sensual folly may be a relief from the emptiness of knowledge. To go from one extreme to the other, the high thoughts of intellect and wisdom to the base things of life, nothing more than animal desires. But is this not what our world does if we look out there, how they run from idea to idea? It didn't last long. The little hats that they used to wear back in the late 50s and early 60s, they were popular for what, 6 months? Now they're gone again. And now everybody seems to be getting tattoos. You know, and you wonder, well, what are we going to run to next to find peace and satisfaction? Satisfaction is not found in these earthly pleasure accomplishment. I said in mine heart, go to now, I will prove thee with mirth. Therefore enjoy pleasure. Do we ever just have pleasure? It sounds great, doesn't it? But the truth is, God has built into every man the need for purpose. And if all we are going to do is satisfy pleasure, it will come up empty. Because that's not how we are built. That's not how we were created. That's not how we're programmed by God. He created us and planted us for a specific purpose in time and space. And for us to do anything else is going to fall far short of that grand plan. And although we may seem so insignificant in the sea of, 7 billion people on the face of this earth, God knows each and every one of us. And what we do is important. I said it before, but just imagine if everybody followed Scripture, how it would change this world. You wouldn't have to have locks on your doors. You could let your windows open. There would be no gun law worries. There wouldn't be drug problems. There wouldn't be domestic abuse. And on and on and on and on. Mirth, glee, gladness, pleasure, rejoicing. If that's all we want is just pleasure, it's going to come up empty. Do you realize, again, it was studied in earlier studies, everything that you try, earthly speaking, is supposed to come up empty, and that's the sorrow and travail. And you keep seeking, hopefully, until you find God. That's what's supposed to happen. That's exactly what Solomon's telling us. He pursued base ideas. Consider this as we think about giving himself to wine and different things. But I want you to see this one here, 1 Kings 11:3. And he, Solomon, had 700 wives, princesses, 300 concubines, and his wives did what? Turned away his heart. He got what he wanted with 1,000 women. And what did it succeed in doing? Turning him away from God. It didn't work. It is interesting to go back and reflect on the life of Solomon as we think about what he's writing here. You think about this. 1,000 women. He had no restraint in his indulgence. He did as he pleased with no concern of the women that he used. Do you think he had a happy home? I'm willing to guess he couldn't even remember all their names. They all wore name tags. Believably, these women acted happy because it wasn't right for them to be sad in the presence of the king. Don't you realize what a blessing this is? But he violated God's plan, thus they were not at a happy home. And think about this. Solomon had no consideration for 999 men that needed a wife. He needed one. And there are 999 men wishing they could have a wife. And the king's got them. And for a brief time, his harem may have given him joy. But alas, it was vexation of spirit. I said of laughter, it's mad of mirth. What doeth it? One evening in 1808, a gaunt, sad-faced man entered the office of Dr. James Hamilton in Manchester, England. The doctor was struck by the melancholic appearance of his visitor. He inquired, "Are you sick?" "Yes, doctor, sick of a mortal malady." "What malady?" "I am frightened of the terror of the world around me. I am depressed in life. I can find no happiness anywhere. Nothing amuses me, and I have nothing to live for. If you can't help me, I shall kill myself." The doctor replied, "The malady is not mortal. You need only to get out of yourself. You need to laugh, to go get some pleasure from life." "What shall I do?" the man replied. "Go to the circus tonight and see Grimaldi the clown. Grimaldi is the funniest man alive. He'll cure you." A look of pain crossed the poor man's face. He said, "Doctor, you don't get it. I am Grimaldi. It doesn't bring happiness." Mirth should never take us to mischief. Mirth has its bounds. When we meet merrily, let us so act that we may part merrily, not ashamed of anything that we did in our pursuits of pleasure. There is an old saying, not often quoted, but very true: no mirth is good without God. So it is. Solomon has proven that laughter does not provide satisfaction unless God is in it. Do we not see people today trying to escape life, all the sitcoms, and they have to have canned laughter, telling you now it's time to laugh, comedy clubs, all done to entertain us, and people are still pursuing. I searched in my heart how to gratify my flesh with wine and how to lay hold on folly. The preacher lived a life saturated with the pleasures of wine and light frivolous amusements. He wanted to see what was good for the sons of men to do if this was all there was to life. So it is. Too many Christians are doing this very thing. Please look again at verse 3. I sought in mine heart to give myself unto wine, yet acquainting my heart with wisdom, and to lay hold of folly. He still has in his mind God. But is this not true of many Christians? In that they're still seeking for the pleasures of this world instead of immersing themselves in the truths of Scripture and truly developing a relationship with God? This is exactly where Solomon is. Please consider the church in the last days. Consider the church in the last days of the church age. 2 Timothy 3:2. What's it going to be like? For men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, without natural affection, truce breakers, false accusers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good. Here's what I want to get at through this whole mess. Traitors, heady, high-minded. Ready? Lovers of pleasure more than lovers of God, and yet having a form of godliness, and this is where Solomon is. I still have my wisdom, but I want all the goodness of the world. And God says, from such turn away. So it is what Solomon is telling us is just as relevant several thousand years later. And technology has taken changes and advancements. Are we really any smarter? I don't know. You look at all the things that they built and that they did. And it's pretty remarkable how intelligent they were. But did they have God in it? He then goes to building projects with landscaping. Verse 4, I made me great works. Builded me houses, planted me vineyards, made gardens and orchards, and I planted trees in them of all kinds of fruit. I made pools of water. You talk about an estate. He even has water to be able to irrigate. It says to water, therefore, the wood that brings forth the trees. He was an accomplished man to do all of this. Now, I want you to notice something here. As he is now trying mirth and laughter and wine and women, he's now going to try his hand at architecture. And is this not typical of people who have money? They build themselves the Biltmore, right? And other estates, Hermitage, Monticello, Mount Vernon. They build places. I want you to consider his building. 1 Kings chapter 9, verse 10. And it came to pass at the end of 20 years, Solomon had built two houses in 20 years. Got it? The house of the Lord and the king's house. Well, let's take a look at this temple. 1 Kings 6:37. In the fourth year was the foundation of the house of the Lord laid in the month Ziph, and in the 11th year, in the month Bul, which is the 8th month, was the house finished. There out all the parts thereof, according to all the fashion of it. So he was 7 years building the temple. Take a look at chapter 7, verse 1. But Solomon was building his own house 13 years. He put almost twice as much effort into his own home than he did God's temple. Do we not see the seeds of this man's distraction by worldly things? It's interesting if you read 1 Kings 6 and surrounding passages. It's this whole effort to assemble all of these goods to build the temple. And it talks about how they built this and how they built that. But if you look in the middle of all this, they had this and this. God puts this in the middle of that text. In the middle of that text, 1 Kings 6:11. And the word of the Lord came unto Solomon, saying, Solomon, concerning this house which you're building, I want you to stand back with all of your gold and silver and all of your artisans and all of your cedars concerning this house which they're building, if you walk in my statutes and execute my judgments and keep all my commandments to walk in them, then I will perform my word with thee. And did you notice it didn't have anything to do with building the temple? If you want to please me, walk in my statutes. I really don't care so much about this building by comparison. And if you keep all my commandments, the middle of verse 12, and walk in them, then I will perform my word with thee, which I spake unto David thy father. 13, and I will dwell among the children of Israel, will not forsake my people Israel. So Solomon built the house and finished it. God's saying, you know what? I'm not impressed with all of the glory in the building. I want your relationship with me. That's what matters. As you read that, you'll see God's efforts throughout Solomon. Solomon, have a relationship with me. And you see Solomon toying with the world. Think about this as he did gardens and pools and all sorts of fun things. 1 Kings 4:32, and he, Solomon, spake 3,000 proverbs. And his songs, he was a musician, were 1,005. And he spake of trees, from the cedar in Lebanon even to the hyssop that springeth out of the wall. He had beasts and fowl and creeping thing and of fishes, all part of his estate. He used his wisdom. I'll bet it was beautiful. He carried his wisdom in excess to building projects to excess. And he found no satisfaction even though he succeeded. Let's consider verse 7 of Ecclesiastes 2. I got me servants and maidens and servants born in my house. Also I had great possessions, great and small cattle above all that were in Jerusalem before me. I gathered me also silver and gold and the peculiar treasure of kings and of provinces. I got me men singers, women singers, and the delights of the sons of men as musical instruments, and that of all sorts. He had servants and maidens to work the fields, the house, the domestic chores, the cooking, the cleaning. And besides those hired from without, he had married couples in the precincts of his grounds, palaces, etc., who had children grow up, and he employed them. He had great possessions, great and small cattle. Remember, that was part of the Proverbs. He talked about animals. It says he had excess wealth. Now, this is interesting because if you remember when God came to Solomon when he was just starting his kingship and he said, what do you want? And Solomon said, I need wisdom to lead the people. And God says, that's great, so I'll give you riches also on top of that. That was one of the things he promised that he would give also. But if you read this, look at verse 8. I gathered me also silver and gold. I gathered. God said, I will give you riches. And here it's saying, I gathered. It wasn't enough what God gave him. How much money do you need? He had wealth above more than what God even gave and intended for him to have. He had no limit in his search for satisfaction. Right now, the United States is crazy with this lottery. Your chances are better of being hit by lightning twice. And they flock to it. Did you know if you put your efforts in God, he promises to take care of you even more than $1 billion? Because he can do more for us than money can. He can protect us from things we don't even know, the things that haven't happened because he protected us. Money can't do that. It says this too. Consider in verse 8, I gathered me also silver and gold and the peculiar treasure of the kings and of the provinces. I suspect he had a collection of things that were like exclusive to this province. They had some type of mining or some type of skill, whether it be fabric. And he collected that. Oh, that's neat. I like that. Or their artisans could produce something. And I think he had collections that were probably incredible in their amount of wealth that it cost him. He knew no restraint. He hired musicians for his personal entertainment. Now, I want you to remember something. Remember in chapter 1, we studied there's nothing new under the sun? And there is nothing new under the sun. Do you realize everything that we read of this man several thousand years ago is just as pertinent today? People are looking still today for physical pleasure with wine and women, laughter, entertainment, building and landscaping projects, servants, possessions, livestock, wealth, gold, silver, music. Which one doesn't pertain to today? They all do. That's why this book is still so alive. Solomon is speaking to us today, as it was then. The conclusion, "So I was great," verse 9, "increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me, and whatsoever mine eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my portion of all my labor. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought, and on the labor that I had labored to do, and behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit, and there was no profit under the sun." He spent a fortune on all of that. Where do you think Solomon got his money? Taxes. And people were giving of their hard-earned money in taxes so that the king could have this extravagant lifestyle. Do you think maybe the people weren't real happy with Solomon sometimes? Boy, I'll bet. "Alas, all was not well, though he took much pains to make and to think it well. Even his choice delights paled, and he brought conclusions of disgust. Even in his lordly pleasure house, he was haunted by the grim, menacing specters which troubled him before it was built. In the harem, in the paradise he had planted, under the groves, beside the fountains, at the sumptuous banquet, a bursting bubble, a falling leaf, and an empty wine cup sufficed to bring back the thought of the brevity of the emptiness of life." So it is, this man is telling us, been there, done that, and in essence, don't waste your time. Are we listening? The writer seeks to prove his heart with mirth and laughter. He treats his flesh with wine. He gathers peculiar treasure. He is enamored of greatness, magnificence, and abundance. He delights in architecture, scenery, literature, music, song. Everything is spectacular, dazzling, wonderful. This is a very misleading idea of the world in which we find ourselves. It is partial. It's exaggerated. It's selfish, and it's superficial. And Solomon succeeded in all of it. He had quite a mind to take on all those academic studies and to process it all. And he had to conclude, now what? Now what? It didn't make him happy. The point of Ecclesiastes is for us to learn from the preacher. Are we listening? Or are we going to have to learn the hard way? Father God, bless this study. Thank you for the time we've had to look at your word. Bless it. Help us to learn from the preacher, Solomon. Help us to not waste our time, but work on our relationship with you. In Christ's name.
This is Pastor Rod Holler. I pray you enjoyed that message. Thanks for listening.